Let me get this straight. You are an Iranian-born,
yes,
published author.
Yes.
Getting their master's in software engineering,
yes,
all while becoming a pilot.
Yes.
Okay. We got a lot of stuff to break down in an hour.
Aw, thank you. All right. Yes.
Well, here, I want to start from the beginning. So we're going to start there. We're going to cover a lot of stuff here. But
absolutely,
talk about those humble beginnings. Like, how do you get on a journey of so much ambition, so much drive? Like, how does that even happen?
So I feel like it's how you grow up. Usually, and when you have like parents that usually motivate you a lot, so I feel I have my drives from my mom and my dad, because they were like always telling me that I can do more than I can imagine. So a lot of it coming from there, but at the same time, this was not compatible with the society that I was living in, and I was not allowed to do many of the stuff that are normal here, and it was just it keeps you, it's like holding you from doing stuff, because you know, girls don't do those things,
right,
in Iran. But when I came here, I felt the freedom, and I felt like I don't want to just be a normal girl. I want to be the one that I always wanted to be, and I want to be all the things that I dreamt of when I was a kid. Or because I saw the opportunity, and I saw that, you can be whoever you want and whatever you want, with effort and with passion.
Yeah. Well, so... Yeah, so parents seem to be a huge crucial role in that. Were you living in, when you're in Iran, were you like, I don't know, was it like a metropolitan area? Was it like suburbs? Like, what was the scenario?
So I'm from Tehran, which is the capital, and capital of Iran is like a huge, big city. It's a metropolitan. It's 12 million people during the night and 16 million during the day.
Oh.
Yeah, yeah.
That's
so
huge.
We have tall buildings, we have traffic, we have... Yeah, but it's a beautiful city, and when I first came here, I had to tell this story to my friends in here that, Iran is not a desert, and I have to go through like the details, and when I go to Iran, I have to tell them that, Arizona is not a desert. Yeah.
Same kind of landscape, yeah?
Yeah.
It's the same kind of thing there, right? Very dry.
So we have two main deserts in Iran, but the rest of the country is mountainous. We have two mountain chains. We have four seasons, mm-hmm, and we have snow. We have snow resorts. Yeah.
Does it still get hotter here? I can imagine we still hold that record. Yeah.
Yeah, absolutely. Okay. I mean, because we have the four seasons, we have hot summer as well. Yeah.
That's crazy.
And also like cold winters that snows and
mm-hmm. Okay, so then you were growing up there, and was it early on that you kind of got into like computer science and so forth?
No, I had no experience with computers. I barely knew how to do with Office.
Mm-hmm.
And then, so my major back in Iran was chemistry. I got my bachelor's back in Iran, and then I came here in 2015. Mm-hmm. And I wanted to study PhD in chemistry, so I went to ASU, and I did the research for 2 years, and then I changed gear to computer science for some reasons. One of them was not being able to do the research that I really like, and also the research that I was doing was not something that I wanted to do in 10 years.
Gotcha.
Yeah.
Understood. Yeah. But you did start with chemistry.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay. I started with chemistry.
Why chemistry?
So, you know, after high school, you have to, if you want to go to college, you need to do an entrance exam. Mm-hmm. It's called concours. It's a French word. And it's really hard, and you will go to anything that your scores tells you.
Mm-hmm.
So it's not like you can pick anything.
Right.
Yeah. So when I have done that that exam, which was like so super, super stressful exam for everyone. It's not just for you, for me. And yeah, so my scores just dictated me that, okay, so you have these options. So I picked my best option, which was chemistry in Tehran University.
How do they know that, though? Is it more... So we have something similar. I forget what it's called, but it's same... It's not like an exam where it's like technical questions. It's like, yeah, what are you interested in? And like, you know, are you more team oriented? Or are you like kind of a solo project? Is it like that, or is it like math, STEM based?
Exactly. Okay. It's math and STEM based, and it's really super hard. And they make it hard because the time that we were doing, our generation, we are baby boomers, and it was after the war between Iran and Iraq, and there were a lot of us, and they had to put, like, you know, there were like limited resources, and they couldn't let everyone to go to the universities, especially the top universities and the ones that are free, because there are some universities in Iran that are free, and there are like some private ones.
I see.
Yeah.
And are the free ones, are they like well ran? Is it something that's desirable still to go to, or would you want to go to more of a private
education
one?
Education in Iran is very strong, and it's very, you know, up to date, and it's not like, and the reason is, I think it goes back to the history of Iran, that people are so pro education and very like well educated, and Yeah, the quality of the universities, most of them are very good.
Gotcha. Yeah. And then, yeah, we're kind of skipping around, but like, again, I kind of want to go back to growing up in that, in Tehran. So like, you're, again, in this massive city. I think people probably have some kind of implications to what it's like to living in Iran in general. Yeah. Did you feel anything more like, I don't know, towards like the violence or like the war or anything like that? Yeah. Like, how did that impact on a day to day?
So Iran, at least at the time that I was growing up, was safe. And but the thing is that how do you describe safe? If you obey, if you say yes to everything that they say, yeah, you're safe. But at the same time, you are you have to do some stuff that maybe you don't want to. For example, growing up, at the age of 7, you have to wear hijab and you have to cover your hair if you want to go to school and start school for the first grade. And these things were like super normal in Iran. But when you grow up, because you're a kid and you don't know what you have no idea what these things meaning, like in reality. But when you grow up, you feel like, oh, maybe they shouldn't have made me to do that, and they should like let me decide when I like grow up. So yeah, so it's safe until you you obey and you don't do any political activities, or you don't promote anything that they don't want it.
Gotcha.
Yeah.
Ooh. Safe if you obey.
Yeah.
What a terrifying statement.
It is. It is.
Gotcha. And so, yeah, that is also kind of what I get into as well. So, like, again, do you think that's kind of the stem of the problem, where it's like you grow up following these rules and it just becomes normalized, and it's not till like maybe much later in life that you're like, hold on, like, is this okay? Do you think that's what it is? Are kids, like, you know?
They have no idea.
No idea, right?
They give this feeling to them that, oh, what you're doing is like great, or this is like the story, this is how you should live. There is no pick and choose.
Gotcha.
Yeah.
If you remember, I can imagine the same mindset towards like a school uniform, right? You don't really think about your school uniform. You're like, yeah, it's just what you wear.
Yeah.
And yeah, everyone's wearing one, and it's a bit strange, but like, this is what you wear. Simple.
Yes.
Okay. So it's that kind of mindset. Yeah, exactly. Normalization.
Yeah.
Wow. Gotcha. And so what ages, for born there until what age did you get out?
So I lived in Iran for the whole 27, the first 27 years. Yeah.
Gotcha. So and in that time, you got your bachelor's, just your bachelor's.
My bachelor's, and then I went to work. I was working for a publication company, and I was an author, and I wrote 3 books there. And the first year, it was the bestseller. And the first year, I sold 16,500 books.
In your first book, you said?
The
first book, yeah. You wrote, published 16,000 copies, first year.
The first year.
Bestselling.
Yeah, it was bestselling. And then on the first year, I was the sole female and the youngest on staff.
Wow.
Yes.
What? How did
yes. Oh yes. All right, hold on, the years after, female joined, and I was the youngest because it was just weird for me too, because the other authors, they were like all high school teachers that were like, they had like tons of years of experience.
Yeah.
And yeah.
Well, okay, hold on. So three books. First book, yeah. Best-selling, 16,000 copies. What was the book about?
So that publication company was doing books for like helping students how to get better in like all the topics. For me, it was the chemistry.
Gotcha.
And yeah, yeah.
So it was a textbook? Not quite.
Not the textbook, mm-hmm. but to help like a supplemental book.
Okay,
yeah.
Gotcha.
Yeah, yeah.
About chemistry. Yeah. That's amazing. Yeah, yeah. What age did you write that?
I think I was 24.
24?
Yeah.
How long did it take?
So it took, they were in a rush, and it took 3 months, like the first book, to just put everything together. But yeah. Then it took longer to revise. And so they were like sending it back to me, and then I had to revise and resubmit it. And yeah.
Gotcha. And that process took maybe like a year or less than that?
Less than that. Yeah, wow. Maybe 5 months.
5 months, yeah, from, yeah, written, edited, published, sold.
Yes.
That's,
yes,
crazy. Yes.
So the thing is that I was even in the last semester of my education, my bachelor's, and I had to hide that I am still doing my last semester, because I really wanted that job.
And it has like degree required?
Yes, they were degree required. They were like specific... university required, and I was like, I really need this job, and I want to do it, and I know that I can do it. So I didn't tell them that I am in my last semester, and I had 18 credits at that semester. It was brutal. I remember that 3 months, but it was sweet, because yeah. I was just so excited that I'm doing that.
Of course.
Yeah.
That's incredible.
Yeah.
Man, 23. That's insane. So then, wait, so it's not a textbook, right? So there's no, like, curriculum you're following. So, like, how do you know at 23 years old, like, what are you writing about for supplemental knowledge? Like, where does that inspiration come from?
Yeah, so there were, this company that I was doing, they were doing research on a specific exam that Iran was doing good, but not being the best or the first or something, that they wanted to make sure that they wanted to know why the students in Iran are not doing perfect. And they did, and the R&D team, they realized that they did the research that the other countries that are doing good, what are they doing? And then they came up with a structure. And they said, okay, we want a structure similar to this.
Gotcha.
So I had the structure, and I had the textbook. So I just had to put, information,
yeah,
and make sure that it meets those needs.
That's incredible.
Yeah.
Oh my God. In less than 3 months that you have to write that. I mean, that's insane.
Yeah, yeah.
Wow. All while taking classes. I mean, yes, that's crazy.
Yeah.
First one was a hit. Bestseller, yes. Got there. And then the second book, did you start writing right away? I can imagine this is like an annual thing.
All three books was it was a package. So.
Oh, I see. Gotcha.
Yeah, it was a chemistry package for the ninth grade students. And it was called workbook and teacher book and practice book.
Gotcha.
Something like that. Yeah.
Understood.
Yeah.
Wow. And then this just got sold to like students, teachers, all that, and schools, I'm
for
guessing,
4 years.
That kind of thing.
Yeah.
That's crazy. Yeah.
And then I got outside of US, and because I was not there, so I had to give it away.
Wow.
Yeah, but I think I got what I wanted from it.
That's good.
Yeah.
So, yeah, with that, I mean, I can imagine that's a lot of success, right?
Yeah.
I mean, that's
a
massive amount of success to say that you even did that.
Yes. Yeah.
I would say if you stayed there and just continued that path, I'm guessing you would be a very successful person over there, no?
I would have been. been definitely, well, one of the reasons that I got out was the economy. So I remember the last year, the company was like struggling with even buying paper.
Wow.
Because the paper was so scarce and people couldn't buy and it was so expensive. And I felt like maybe it's time for me to change. And, you know, I knew that the economy in Iran, it was going down and still it's like very bad now. Mm-hmm. So I was thinking maybe I should change a little bit. And yeah, that's why I decided to go to do PhD and come to US.
That's so.
Yeah,
I just want to put it out there that this is kind of the decision making. Is that yes, you're like a successful published author.
Yeah.
In a bad economy, however, made more sense to almost like not start over, but basically start over in an entirely different environment, entirely different country. Yeah. Yeah. That is a better thing than to be successful in a place that is, economically speaking, at the very least, declining.
Yeah. Yes. Yes.
Wow.
Yeah,
that's insane. So then, okay, gotcha. So that's Iran, which is an entire crazy story, and we'll touch on that.
It's
but then you come over here.
Crazy. Yes.
At 27.
27.
To get your PhD.
Yes.
In chemistry. Yes. Okay. This is just a wild story. I'm just making sure I got the highlights correct. Got it. And so you're over here now. I want to talk about first. We'll talk about everything in there, but like I want to talk about student visas specifically. I'm very curious in this because I know a lot of people that have been on student visas and doing all that. What is that process like when you made that decision in Iran and be like, okay, it's time to go. Like, let's go get that PhD and so forth. Tell me that process of, okay, upon making that decision until setting foot in ASU. Like, what is that process like?
So the thing is that for Iranians, it's specifically harder for Iranian students to get the visa because of the political issues that Iran has with the United States. And it makes sense because there is no relationship. So they cannot obtain information from individuals that are coming to U.S. So, for example, if any students from other countries, they want to come to U.S., they will go through process of getting their background check and all those stuff, which makes sense because it's like a new person. We want to know what's going on federally and all those stuff. So they cannot do those things. So they would it would be really hard for them to get all those information, and then it will take time. So I was so lucky to get a visa under 1 month. Actually, it was exactly 1 month.
Wow.
Yeah, but then there are like some people that get the visa 3 months, 1 year, 2 years, or nothing at all. So it's really hard to...
So how did you manage getting it so quick? Is there anything special you did, special program?
No.
Okay.
So when I went to U.S. Embassy in Dubai, they didn't give me the visa right away, but they say that we need time for clearance. So they gave me the yellow paper.
Okay.
Yeah, so the white paper means that you cannot get in.
Oh.
The pink paper means that go ahead. But then the yellow is we need more information. Yeah, and
on hold.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah. Which that process was really stressful because you don't know what is going on and how you can help to like speed it up, or is it going to take a long time? I know for the fact that a lot of students who come here that are waiting for their visa to come, they are going through a lot because they don't know if they should stay, if they shouldn't stay, if they should start something, if they should, you know, everything is just so challenging. Yeah.
A little bit more hesitant on your actions when you're like, well, I don't know where I'm going to be next month.
Yes,
yeah.
Yes.
I see where that comes from. Does your background in working with a publication in education specifically, did you think that maybe helped the process or like between the other candidates? I know that, you know, we can't see it over here, but maybe them picking their candidates are like, oh, well, this makes more sense for this exact candidate or no?
No, honestly, they are not looking for these things. They are mostly looking for if you're a criminal or if you have any monetary issues or if the federal government of any country is like looking for you. So they're mostly looking for these things, not like your background, because they don't care about your background, because your background is important to the universities and your experience is important to the university because they want to know how much experience you are, what areas you worked on. Yeah.
Gotcha.
So they don't ask about anything like that.
Okay.
Yeah.
But then you got it within a month, or a month exactly, which is incredible.
Yeah.
You know you got it now, okay? You got that decision. Well, how much longer until like you leave the country now?
As soon as you have it, you can just leave the country.
And yeah. was that same the case for you? You're just like, okay.
I just left.
Packed up and gone.
Yeah.
Wow.
I was ready to get out.
That makes sense. Yes. And then so, you know, you have all these ties there, though.
Yeah, absolutely.
You make it over here, right? You're days travel away.
I know.
What is your connection with like family and friends now that you are completely, you know, across the world? Like, how does that tie in? Are you guys still like close? Did anything get like severed because of it?
Yeah, absolutely. So the first year, everything was so exciting. I was going to my dream country. Oh, it's US. I'm going to do this. I'm going to do that. How exciting everything is. But then after the first year, the hardship kicks in. Mm-hmm. And then the fact that you might not easily go back home and visit your family and all those stuff, which is okay. I mean, this is what I knew I'm going to face because this was my choice. And it's brutal, but it was there and I knew that it's going to happen.
Also like a source of inspiration too, no? I feel like most students that are on like student visas are is from what my experience is incredibly hardworking, like very studious, that kind of thing. And I'm guessing that is because of that, right? It's an opportunity that you don't want to squander how we all do here without visas. But second off, it's like, you have all these ties back home, that kind of thing. You want to help out either your community or just, you know, better your life personally. And then I'm sure all kind of, you know, is an amalgamation of pure effort, pure like I'm gonna get this done. I'm gonna work at it. And then again, you're not going for something easy. You're in PhD for chemistry, which is I can't imagine there's many more harder fields than that. So tell me what that process was like going into that and finishing that out.
Finishing the chemistry? I actually didn't finish the whole chemistry because I told you about how I changed gear to computer science because I felt like I don't want to do chemistry research, specifically that research, in 10 years. And for us Iranians, because of all the, you know, relationship things that are going on between Iran and U.S., it's hard to get any sort of jobs. And, so I felt like maybe if I choose another path, that I might be like more successful in it.
You see.
Yeah, so I chose coding.
Interesting. And so we'll talk about coding. I want to talk about that. But the choice to do that, that seems very big picture of you, right? That doesn't seem very, I want to do this. That makes like, this makes sense. Does that make sense? It's more of an objective decision than like something you subjectively like, this is something that I'm passionate about. And I'm sure you are, but like, this just makes sense that this is where the space is going. So I'm going to do that.
Yeah.
Not, you know, just like the field isn't going that the way I want. So I'm not going to be here.
Exactly. Yeah.
Does that decision kind of like lay on you a little bit? Like, is there still that kind of subjective passion towards chemistry versus software engineering or does that make sense?
Yeah. So I think, I had a passion for chemistry because that's what I started first with. And chemistry is just so beautiful. Everywhere that you touch it, it's so exciting and it's mind-blowing how how far you can go from like how far that they went actually, especially in the U.S. And so it was a passion for me, but sometimes something is not serving you and you need to make quick decisions because there's no time for, you know, just spending it without, you know, knowing what you're going to do.
Yeah.
Or, for example, I wasn't, my age was not like something that I was worried that if I not take actions, I would not be able to, you know, get into the workforce or like finishing school soon, or you know, there are a lot of things that going in your head and you feel like you need to make a decision fast.
Yeah. And also you're on a timer, right? Yes, I mean, the student visa is not infinite. It's not.
Exactly.
So you kind of have to get whatever you need to get done in a very specific amount of time.
Yep.
Gotcha. And so how long was it from, so you get here, right? Start PhD in chemistry. How long did it take for you to be like, hold on, I'm going to switch?
Yes. 2 years.
Okay.
Yeah.
Gotcha.
Yeah.
How long is the student visa, by the way? Like how long do you get?
It's, the duration is the time of the school. So okay. I had 5 years.
Okay.
Yeah. But, if you change your, you know, your major, you need to apply again. And then when you apply, they will give you another I-20, which has a specific duration. And you're just eligible to stay in U.S. based on that time.
Gotcha.
Yeah.
Okay. Understood. And then we get into coding. And again, last question before we get into coding, though. How do you, like, you went to ASU, a very specific school, especially when you have all of America to deal with. How did you decide ASU specifically?
Yeah, so ASU is one of the very well-known schools, and it's a very good school. It's a state school, and it's like ranking. So when you apply, when you want to go study abroad, you will look into your TOEFL exam score, which is like the English proficiency exam, the GRE, and your... what is it? The GPA does matter a lot. So all these things you need to put together and see which universities to apply that your chance of getting there is higher. So ASU was one of them. And then there were like some other universities and
And that's where it came from. Was it a scary choice? Because you're choosing the school sight unseen, in a sense. Like, you know, most people kind of like tour colleges and like go on college guided tours to like make sure it's right for them. You're kind of going to this completely blind. You can do all the research.
Yes.
There's beautiful pictures, but like that's kind of it. Yes. Was that a scary choice?
It was not a scary choice because it was exciting.
Mm-hmm.
Because you don't know what you're going to experience, but you just know that you want to do it. When you have that drive, then nothing scares you.
Yeah.
And you just go for it. I wasn't scared. I was just worried about the fact that you need to be fast because science is just changing constantly and very fast. And you need to be updated and you need to read a lot and you need to be... know what you're doing.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Quickly.
Yeah. Exactly.
Right. Yeah. Speaking of like kind of that rearranging of space, you're going into coding. Do you have any experience going into this?
So the thing is that when I was doing research in chemistry laboratory, well, things was not always going right, and I felt like I need something beside chemistry to, you know, as a hobby. But I chose coding for some reason because there was like I had a cousin that she went through coding and programming and it was always like exciting talking to her about computer and all those stuff. So it was in the back of my mind always. But when I saw the advertisement, I said, okay, maybe I can just try it a little bit and see if I like it and make my own website. But that was it.
Wow.
I want to see how to make my own website. And then I kept going, and I had no idea what it means to say coding boot camp.
Mm-hmm.
And then I went in, and it was a boot camp, and it was really hard. It was 6 months programming, full stack development. And I also had to move fast for that one too because I remember the first week was they were teaching about JavaScript and I called my friend and I said they only taught JavaScript for 1 week and they and then he said that is not a good school.
That's all you need, these are all the tools, you're good. Move
and
on.
And then exactly. So that was the purpose of the bootcamp because they wanted to touch base things and tell you, okay, if you want to do this, you need to these things.
Yeah.
But most of it was on us and to practice and to get familiar.
Was the boot camp very beginner friendly? Like, I know nothing.
Yeah.
Could I do the boot camp?
Absolutely.
It's like that? Okay,
yeah,
gotcha.
Yeah. So usually boot camps are a very good starting point for anyone who doesn't have any experience in coding.
Okay.
It is challenging. It's not easy, but there are a lot of resources out there that can help you. And usually the people who runs the boot camp, they are very resourceful and they're very helpful. They're usually they have career advancement programs as well. So it's not just teaching you. They will actually help you to find a job. And the fact that you will get a job, the chance that you will get a job is really high.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah, yeah.
For the 6-month boot camp, that's amazing. Yeah, you have to learn so much so quick, apparently. My goodness.
Yeah, yeah. It's, you will learn a lot.
Yeah.
And at the same time, because you cannot know everything at the same time, and it takes time, but at least boot camp gives you the perspective of, it will widen your,
Yeah, broaden your horizons.
Exactly, yeah.
And so, yeah, so doing boot camp, I'm guessing at the very least it'll give you some perspective on what you like and you don't like, right? It's like,
yes.
Oh, like, yeah, exactly. We only spent a week on Java, but like that seems like a great thing to like really focus in on. And then you kind of go from there and start your path.
Exactly, yeah.
Gotcha. Yeah. So then you finish that. And then again, so going into the major of like software engineering specifically versus like, you know, someone that did it through high school or something and has like experience and then getting into the major. You're kind of going into it, you do the boot camp and so forth, but is that major really, again, kind of beginner friendly, or is it you really need to know all of this kind of, you know, some fundamental stuff and then you can get started on the major?
No, I think, I feel like software engineering, computer science is a field that, unlike any other fields, maybe unlike chemistry, you don't need to know everything from the beginning. You learn because it's changing constantly, and you cannot know everything. And by the time you learn something, something better comes out. And once you know the fundamentals, once you know, for example, what object-oriented language is, I think you can learn many different languages. So it doesn't matter if you are a beginner or if you are a professional, you will get a job.
Yep.
Yeah. And then the good thing is that you will learn from the others a lot. So it's very people in our field, in computer science, they're very helpful. They're very motivating community.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
I like that. And then coming from chemistry, I'm curious, do you see any similarities between the fields? I have the inclination that chemistry is a very slow field, very slow moving. Maybe that's wrong. Mm-hmm. Software engineering is like one of the fastest fields out there. It's always changing. It's always, every year there's something incredibly faster than the previous year and so forth. And you kind of have to adapt. Always new languages, all these new things.
Yeah.
Chemistry, I feel like that's something that has been not static, but you know, it's a very slow moving process, at least historically speaking. That's what it seems like. You only have groundbreaking stuff happening every, like, you know, once, twice a century, right? It's, like, very slow. So do you see any similarities between the two fields, or are they couldn't have been more different?
I feel like chemistry is also going really fast. Mm. It's mind-blowing, but not compared to computer science. If you compare anything with computer science, it's slow.
Yeah.
But I feel like, they have actually, computer science helped chemistry a lot. Mm. And there are a lot of things that you can use computer science to help visualize and to help model chemistry with.
Yeah. That's really interesting. I guess you're right. Strangely, computer science has helped every field.
Yes.
It's not just computer science, not just software engineering or anything like that. It's everything. It's helped all of it.
Yeah.
That's kind of amazing to think about. I've never really thought about that.
Every aspect of life.
A good field to be in, I guess. Yeah. And so you're starting that study, right? You're doing that. And you have to start over, right? That another bachelor's, right?
Exactly.
Not going PhD anymore. Bachelor's.
Bachelor's,
gotcha. And you did that in 2 years?
So the thing is that I did the boot camp, But sadly, I was on a student visa and I couldn't work. Right. And I had to choose either to still studying or just leave the country.
Yeah.
So until I have the ability to work in United States or like any other places, and I had to still study to get the right visa to be able to work. Mm-hmm. So I wanted to go to get a PhD or a master's degree in computer science. They told me that I don't have enough background in computer science and the boot camp is not enough.
Mm.
So they gave me 25 credits to pass before I enter the master's program. And then because of my visa, I had some issues with my visa and I had to stay, part-time. I couldn't be full-time.
I see.
So it took a long time for me to finish all those 25 credits. And then after I got into the master's degree, I'm still struggling with the visa and I haven't figured it out yet because the process of changing your visas is like so slow in US. And it's a bureaucratic failure.
Yeah. They seem to take their time. They seem to be very patient.
Yes.
Crazy. Gotcha. And
but
so
it is what it is. I mean, I really want to do this and I feel like I have to be persevere and
make it work somehow.
Yes, exactly.
And so how long until this visa, current visa, is done?
So I'm legally here and my I-20, which is from ASU, it allows me to stay. It's just there are constraints because they are still like working on it.
Gotcha. I really hope that works out.
Yeah, thank you.
Crazy. And so, so we're going into software engineering now. Again, getting your feet wet, getting a bachelor's, doing all of this. Now you're getting your master's. You, on your socials, it seems like you post a lot about like women in software engineering. And I think that is kind of a growing thing happening is I don't remember the exact statistics. Maybe do you know the exact statistics by chance? I want to say it was like 20% female is software engineering, something like that. Maybe more.
I think it's the same, yeah.
Something like that?
It's something like that.
20 to 25%, either way.
I knew before, but I forgot, but I can check it.
Yeah, I think that something like that. Either way, I do think it is like growing at this point, like more women software engineers are coming in. Now, that like being in a male dominated space, I wanted to ask you about that. Like, what are your experience with that? Has that kind of come into play at all with software engineering where it is so predominantly male? Does that even matter in this space or?
It doesn't matter, honestly, but we definitely need more women to. For me, it wasn't weird because I, in Iran, everything is male dominated.
Yeah.
And but at the same time, we have a lot of girls that are, you know, engineers, and they're like, I'm not sure if you know about this, but 65% of university graduates in Iran are women.
65? Wow.
Yeah, that's a lot. It's a big number. And 70% of them are from STEM fields. Mm. So for me, it was not like something weird to see a lot of men in this field, and I don't feel like scared or anything, but I, at the same time I feel like we need to bring the same amount of quality to the table as men bringing.
Yeah,
do you know what I mean?
Absolutely.
So we shouldn't just say that because we are women we have the right we have to get a special, treatment or something. I feel like if we are capable and we have to bring that so that we have broader voice.
Yeah, of course. Do you want to bring this just a little bit closer to you? Yeah, you're good. But so, with that, I can imagine there's a lot of women out there that are maybe scared to step into this field just because, again, it is maybe just male dominated, but again, it is very quick moving and that kind of thing. Do you have any maybe advice to women that are like, they have sincere interest in software engineering or coding, but they're a little bit intimidated by the, not just the massive space that it is, like it is kind of all encompassing, but also that it is very male dominated. Any advice for those kind of people?
So my advice is that, yes, it is intimidating. It's scary to be around like professionals, but those professionals, one day they were juniors. There are a lot of times that I know for the fact that, for example, a man is a software engineer that I'm working with might not know everything. But that doesn't mean that we should try hard things, and we should the hard things will get easy when we try, when we practice and practice. And if you have this mindset of not quitting, you'll be fine.
Yeah, I love that. Yeah, I don't think anyone should be intimidated by any space, to be honest, no matter what the reasoning is. Like, maybe you should respect it on whatever that kind of fear comes from, but I think it's important to kind of, as you were saying, persevere through that. Yes. That's how kind of, that we need more people in every field, you know what I mean? Like, get into what you're interested in, because
it's those. If you do it every day, at least for two hours, you'll definitely get there. It's just a matter of time, because anything that you start is hard at first. And you need to have a different mindset.
Definitely, yeah. And so with software engineering, is there any dream project that you want to work on? Anything like that is just, I don't know, something that comes from your subconscious that you're like, man, I really would love to work on something like that or near that field or a specific project, something come to mind?
So, yeah, I because I'm still at school, I get the chance to work on many different broad projects. For example, the past summer, I worked on video processing app.
That's cool.
Yeah, so I had no clue. I had no idea how machine learning and all those stuff works, and I've learned a ton. And at the same time, there were like times that I was so disappointed because it was so hard and it was not getting anywhere. But, you know,
you persevere.
Yeah, exactly.
Keep going.
Yes, yes.
That is the method. Exactly. I agree.
Yeah.
I always have this question for software engineers as well. Is it more normal to, with a space like this that's so fast moving, is it more normal for software engineers to be like with a company or like stick with a specific project for a long time? Or is it more normal for software engineers to kind of bounce around? Does that make sense? Like go from project to project. Oh, project's done. Time to go to maybe another company and just like keep switching that way. Is that normal or is it more normal to stick?
Yeah. So, I mean, the thing is that it's a personal choice, because there are a lot of companies out there, and you might feel like, I don't want to work here anymore. I want to go and work on another, project. And it's really normal that people just jump around.
Is that something you would want to do? Do you want to work on many different projects? Or do you want to kind of stick with one and see how that goes for years and years and years?
That's honestly, it's really tough to say now, because I'm not working now.
Yeah.
And it's really hard to, but for school, I feel like I'm so excited that each course is just giving me the options and the feeling that I might want to do this or I might want to do that.
Right.
Yeah.
Understood. Yeah. Okay, gotcha. Software engineering. And so when are you done with the master's?
Hopefully next year.
Oh, that's exciting. That's crazy. Super well educated. I mean, I can't wait. So you have a bachelor's and master's in chemistry?
No,
bachelor's in chemistry. And then a bachelor's in software engineering, getting your master's. Crazy. Okay, gotcha. Okay, I want to touch on one last thing about just like your life, and then I kind of want to go into what's going on with Iran.
Absolutely.
All of while you're doing all of this, you're also learning to fly planes. Why are you doing that?
I feel like there's something about me that, you know, all the things that are happening, I'm learning about myself, and I didn't know any of these things about myself, that I have a drive that a lot of people don't have it. And I feel like I need to appreciate this about myself and be proud of it. I'm not a proud person at all, And but I feel like I need to give myself more credit for all this excitement that I have, and the drive, because I barely see a lot of people doing these things at the same time. I'm not saying that it's a good thing or it's a bad thing, but I just feel like it's good to make yourself busy. Yeah. It's good to make yourself, it's good to be the best version of yourself and trying to try different new things.
Yeah.
And it's not bad to,
explore those avenues. Yes. Yeah, yes. Nothing wrong with that at all. Exactly. But the question is, like, why pilot? Like, as out of all the things you can, like, try to do, or, like, you could, like, learn a different language. You could, like, learn to cook. But you choose, like, I'm going to fly this metal tube through the air. Like, why?
Well, I'm a good cook.
Okay, fair. Yeah. I believe it.
And I love cooking. Yeah. So cooking is one of the things that makes my mind, it keeps me calm. So when I'm back from work, I don't go to change my clothes. I go to the kitchen and start cooking.
Wow.
So that's the only thing that makes me calm down. And for flying, I can say, so my family, we have the history of loving planes. And, so my uncle was in Air Force, and he was a legend, and he was a... He was an example for a lot of people, and he was my role model too. So every time that I was like looking at the planes, I was just it makes me think about him. So one of the things that makes me really like airplanes was that, but I had no idea that I ever want to learn how to fly or anything. And then I came here, and then I saw that, there's this option of women being a pilot. And I realized that I could become a pilot for in Iran, but the process is just ridiculously hard. And they don't care about you're in Iran when you want to get a job or do anything. The first thing that is really very important is that how much you care about the revolutions.
Like agenda.
Agenda and what they, or how much do you care about them? How much do you know about them? Or how much do you accept all the their mindset? So they care about those instead of your skills. Mm-hmm. So most of the time, you don't want to touch anything because it's not about your skills.
Right.
It's about them, and you don't want that.
Yeah.
So I came here, and I flew with my friend's uncle, that he happens to be in the Air Force in Iran, and I had to talk about my uncle to him a lot, and it was just a great experience of going and on a propeller, and it was just amazing.
Yeah.
But then this was like a couple of years ago. And then I met another friend of mine on Instagram, and he happened to have pilot license, and we talked about it, and I've learned a lot of things, and I felt like, okay, this is something that maybe I can touch, and it is exciting, and it makes me happy, and makes me so the things that I try, I found out about myself that the thing that I want to try makes my heart beats more.
Oh yeah.
And it makes me it's so exciting for me, and when that happens, I'm all for it. So that happens when I wanted to do coding. Mm-hmm. That happens when I wanted to write books, because they are so big, and it makes me something happens in my heart, and I feel like when that happens, I feel like that's the drive and that's the excitement that everyone needs.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
I like that. Yeah, you like the big projects. You like the big, very difficult projects. That's what you go for.
Yes, I think I challenge myself a lot.
Good. Yeah, you should. More people should, honestly. Yes. Yeah, it's amazing. Okay, there's so much to talk about. We're gonna have to like be a recurring guest or something. There's just so much. But here, I wanna talk about Iran before we run out of time. So, yeah. And again, take your time on this. But I'm a stupid American. Okay, I just want to put that out there. I don't know much about what's happening, and I purposefully did that so that you can tell me, because there is no one I know better that has your firsthand experience living there, but also, again, like family ties and friends and so forth, but also like getting success in that country and then making a decision to leave it. Like, you have a firsthand experience that is unlike anything I have ever even can possibly dream about.
Yeah.
So can you just like bird's eye view this for me? What is going on over there? Like, you're seeing it all over social medias and news and so forth. Tell me about just like the basics of like what the actual like root of the issue is. Yeah. What's happening?
So the thing is that people are so unhappy now, and it started way before, and this is not something new in Iran, but this time we can hear the voice of people more, because it's getting more frustrating and people are like really fed up with the current situation. One of the things is absolutely the women's rights, and it started with a girl getting killed in the police custody. And so we have something called morality police, and they stop women if they are not covering properly. So wearing hijab is the rule of the country, because the government is Islamic, and their Islamic rules are the rules of the country. Mm-hmm. So there's no... there's no choice for anyone. Even, for example, if you're Christian, you cannot choose not to wear hijab because you don't believe in it. But you have to, because it's a rule of the country. So anyone who doesn't obey, they will get persecuted, and they get, you know. So what happened was that this girl is out in another city, which is the capital, with her brother. And the morality police says that you're not wearing proper hijab, and she resists, and probably they hit their head or something. So she had a concussion, and she passed away 3 days later in the hospital.
Oh my God.
And now people are so furious that this shouldn't be the case. These are our daughters. These are our sisters. This is us that we are. Why are you treating like this? And then people are now furious outside. And this is not only about hijab. It's about a lot of different things. One of the most important ones is the economy. The economy is just so bad. And they dictate that economy to us. Mm-hmm. If they change some stuff around, we wouldn't have to suffer. People of Iran don't have to suffer this much. They can have like a normal life, but they don't. They're not willing to give up on any of their, you know, way of thinkings. And yeah, sadly.
Is that like a well-documented thing for like the, okay, a lot of things got said and I wanted to ask about everything, but for the financial part of it, for the economy, is that well-documented that they're kind of allocating resources inappropriately? Is that what's happening?
Absolutely. There are a lot of corruptions. Iran is a very rich country. We have a lot of oil resources and very like, the minerals that are just going out without anyone tracking them or anything. So the corruption made everything difficult, and just living, having a house in Iran is like unbelievably hard now. And just a normal life is really hard.
Yeah. And I can imagine what happened to that woman. I'm sad to say, I'm guessing that is not a uncommon thing to happen for them, right? Mm-hmm. First off, the term morality police is terrifying.
I know.
That is exactly a scary thing to say and hear.
But morality. Who says what is moral and what's not?
And first off, who sets that standard? Second off, it's like, you're going to put someone in custody definitely like beat them, but maybe kill them due to these set standards set by some random individual. Yeah. Like, that's insane to me. Morality police, like, crazy.
So
go ahead.
The thing is that they took the girl, they wanted to put her in the custody, and they wanted to re-educate them and say that, okay, what you're doing is not right. This is wrong. This is right. Mm-hmm. That the thing that, and she was like, no, this is my choice and I want to do this. And they say that, no, what we are saying is right.
Oh my God.
Yeah.
It's crazy to hear that this is happening in 2022. I mean, that's wild.
That is wild.
It has been happening, I'm sure, for the past like 40 years. 40 you know what I mean?
Yes.
43 yeah. years.
I'm not sure about if you know about the history of Iran. So Iran was only not what you like told me. This. Yeah. So we had 2,500 years of monarchy, mm-hmm. and the last two kings, they did incredibly great job on building the country, building the infrastructure. So if it wasn't for them, Iran was not. Iran was like Iraq or Afghanistan, but Iran is a well-developed country, and people are educated, and people like are a little bit different because of the things that they that the last two kings did. Of course, it was a monarchy, and it was like shortcomings, and not everything was perfect, but. I personally believe that there shouldn't have been a revolution, and it should have been like more of a changing things around.
Yeah, and we were talking previously, and you were telling me about that the last king, right? Yeah. The last one to be there.
Yeah.
And he was I could be wrong about all these facts, but I'm pretty sure he came into power in the 40s, and then the revolution happened like 77, 78, 79. 79. And so, you know, almost four full decades, right? And you were talking about that he was very headstrong on modernization, right? Making everything very updated, industrialization, right? Making it more of a capital of industry rather than whatever. Now, do you think if that revolution didn't happen this king kept going in this progress, like where do you think Iran would be like today? You know what
Iran
I mean? Like 40 years.
One of the very most powerful countries in the world. And many countries didn't want this to happen.
Yeah,
a lot of countries. I don't know if I should just name them or not, but everyone knows they didn't want this to happen because it's scary to have a country who has resource of oil mm-hmm. and be powerful and have something to say.
Yeah.
So I feel like once we are out of oil in the Middle East. Everything will calms down.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. It's just this kind of rich resource that everyone's after.
Yes.
That is kind of sparking all of this conflict. Is that right?
So before the revolution of Iran, the Middle East was super peaceful. And there was no war. There was no chaos. So all this chaos happened when the Shah of Iran overturned. And also, so the revolution happened. Iraq decided to invade Iran. Previously, it was so the king was so strong and very like fearful, and no one could like even think about invading Iran. But then after he was gone, Saddam invaded our country and we had like 8 years of brutal war with Iraq. And my dad also served in that war, and he lost his. Like hearing,
mm-hmm.
and so it wasn't. People in Iran after the revolution, we've been through a lot. So one after another, it was just it was like a domino.
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense. That's so much history goes on with that. This is crazy.
Yeah, I wish I could like open everything.
I know. I want to know about this. But like, it would take years to understand all of it. But so, and we're seeing all this kind of surface very recently on like social media and news and so forth. The outlets that are displaying this, including all social media's news, are they doing a good job of displaying all this or not really?
Not really.
They're not.
No.
Wow.
So the thing is that we don't have a lot of voice. And I'm so sad that people pick and choose. So if it's a human right, if it's a woman's right, everyone should do it. Everyone should like go for it and be pro to it. And I feel like people pick and choose. And we had this issue in 2020 in US, and everyone were like doing it.
Yeah.
But now the same thing is happening in Iran, and no one is really doing that, like broadcasting it or like showing the actual thing that is happening. And that only shows me one thing, that they don't want to. But the fact that why they don't want to is unknown.
Yeah, that's what it seems, right? Yeah. I mean, it seems like there is some kind of narrative of ignorance, you know what I mean? Of like disconnection from like what's happening out there, right? Like,
which is big. I mean, people, how can Iranian people say to the world that we need your support?
Right.
So the people in Iran, they don't want the current regime. They don't want them anymore. And there are very, like, a small percentage of people who are, who wants, and I think it's only 11%. Wow. The rest of the country, the rest of the 85 million people that live in Iran, they don't want the current government.
So how are they still in power at that point then? Is it just too big to fail at this point? They have all the infrastructure, all the power. It's very hard to topple.
Exactly. They have very powerful army, and they have something else called the Revolutionary Guard. So the Revolutionary Guard started after the war between, I think even before, but they got the more power after the war between Iran and Iraq. So they mostly care about the revolution rather than the Iranian people.
Wow.
Yeah. So most of the economy is they're in control of the economy. Yeah,
that's a terrifying prospect.
It is.
My goodness.
So I feel like I can definitely safely say this, that the people of Iran are the hostage of the Islamic regime.
Yeah.
So they do whatever they want, and they don't care about what actual people want in the street.
And the people in the street, like, are they doing anything about that? Are there, like, massive protests or anything? Or is that getting shut down pretty much immediately, I can imagine?
Yeah, so people are currently that we are talking, everywhere in the world, Iranians are outside and they are, like, protesting. They're refusing to go to their jobs, to, like, open their stores or all those stuff. And every night there's, like, a lot of protests, and they shot people. I saw a video that the agents of the government, they were inside a bus and they were shooting while they were shooting to people while they were driving.
Oh my goodness.
It's insane.
That's insane.
Yeah. Yeah.
Where do you think this ends? Where do we go from here?
Hopefully we want freedom. We want freedom of speech. For example, if anyone has a different opinion, they can come out and they say if they don't like it. It doesn't mean anything. It doesn't mean that they're going to overturn anything. But the government, they don't even allow for people to freely go into the street and say that we don't want the leader, for example.
Right.
But if the leader is confident enough about himself, they shouldn't be scared of people outside.
Right.
So I feel like they need to figure out things with themselves.
Right. I mean, it just seems like a council of people that doesn't want to let go of their power, even though they know that, you know, objectively this is negatively impacting the country that they're
running. Exactly,
Oh, my God. And so with that, I also want to talk about, like, I can imagine there's heavy propaganda within the country for those citizens. But have you noticed anything from now being in America for so long, like the propaganda on the other side? So, like, is there any propaganda here about Iran that you maybe disagree with, or maybe Absolutely. You've seen that's like, that's not quite right?
Honestly, so the whole time during the past 2-3 weeks that all these protests started, the whole time I was seeing a lot of posts and news that was coming out about how people of Iran don't want the government. But then sadly, today I saw a couple of posts on Telegram that they were saying that, oh, people, all these things that you're seeing in Iran that is happening, it's being run by CIA, which doesn't make sense. It's people of Iran doesn't want the current government.
Yeah.
So we have no help from anyone. We have neither of the news outside, like CNN, NBC, all these like big news anchors, they don't cover anything.
Yeah.
So it's terrifying. Only us, and we are empty-handed. People are throwing stones to the police in yeah. Iran and to the government. They don't have any arms like people in U.S.
Right. Do you ever think that the U.S. would intervene by chance? Do you think it would ever get to such a thing? I guess because we're not covering it, so it seems like maybe even just a lack of interest, which is crazy. But maybe that's what it is. Maybe, do you think maybe that is one way that, in general, people can, is just awareness, simply enough. Exactly. It's like if everyone was aware.
We only want awareness. We want everyone outside U.S. to know about what is going on, so they wouldn't kill people without anyone knows. Because previously, before social media, they were doing that. They were killing without anyone knows about any of this happening. But this is not new. I told you that this started way before. Mm-hmm. Mass killings, they call it mass purge.
Oh
that they
God.
kill people who are against the government easily, and there was no social media to put it out. Now the social media is out and everyone is posting. Now they cannot hide.
Right.
Do you know what I mean?
Yeah. It's very exposed. Everyone's got a camera on them, that kind of thing.
Exactly.
Yeah, I get that.
So the only thing that we want is the news to cover it. I mean, what is the news for?
Yeah.
Just put the reality outside, not just hiding it or not just censoring it. We don't want to be censored. We want to be here.
Heard. Of course. Yeah. And so I agree with, so like you're saying that, you know, this isn't new. It's just being exposed. I'm curious, like, since you grew up there, so since being born there and upon leaving and upon now, has it gotten worse, the same, and now is just exposed? Or, like, because it sounds really bad, obviously, right? The woman, I'm guessing, is just one story of thousands upon thousands, right? I mean, that's just how it goes. And so I'm trying to figure out is if this power dynamic that the regime is kind of controlling, is it getting worse in that they're being more brutal with their citizens, or is it stagnating or getting better?
Absolutely. It's not going to change anything, and it's even making it worse because they want control, and they will make things worse.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm pretty sure that if this rise doesn't get anywhere soon, people of Iran is going to be screwed, because they're going to put more control on the people, put more sanctions on the people, and they're going to really screw up everything.
Do you have any idea what that country would look like, let's say, if the regime got their way, if it was complete control? What would that even look like?
It would be, it would be North Korea. It would be Afghanistan with Taliban. Yeah.
It would be that.
Yeah.
Corrupted.
Corrupted, yeah.
Complete control.
Exactly. We don't want that. We Iranian people, we are far from those kind of styles of living.
That's correct. And so now, that Iran is insane situation, crazy. I feel like I learned a lot, so much just in the last 10 minutes. But now that you're in the U.S. currently, right?
Yeah.
Does the concept of freedom change now that you've kind of experienced very different territories on the globe? Does that internally kind of trigger anything to you now?
I think I didn't understand your question.
Just like the idea of freedom, on like what that even means, or what that, you know, is kind of inspiring towards people. Because again, being in Iran, again, we heard this story, very summarized view, but you heard your story of like, you know, being a successful Iranian person there and choosing to leave it to start basically completely fresh,
exactly,
to come here and so forth. And just knowing those concepts of freedom that are vastly different, at least in the government's eyes, what that means to you, or maybe just general citizenry.
Yeah, so the experience of having freedom for me, I feel like now I definitely want the same freedom for my own people too.
Mm-hmm.
Because now I have the taste of having freedom and being able to live on your own and and choose what you want. And I definitely want everyone to have this opportunity and to experience these moments of like how an individual can be themselves.
It seems so simple, right?
Exactly.
Like just to
normal life.
Do what you want.
Yeah.
Wear what you want.
Exactly.
You want your life to be about this? That's fine. As long as you're not hurting other people, that's okay. Like it just seems such like a basic human need, but a human right, that it's crazy to hear that still in this modern day it is being so heavily subjugated against. That no, you cannot have rights. No, you cannot wear what you want. You have to wear this. You have to do this. You have to believe in what we believe. That is such a crazy concept to hear today.
Yes.
You know what I mean? Like it's just insane. But yeah, I think, well, again, like I think your story is an inspiring one at the very least for everyone. Whether it's, you know, kind of wondering what's going on in Iran or in your own life of where to go, what drives you, again, what gets your heart beating, right?
Yeah, yeah,
that kind of thing. Yeah. And I think your story is just a fascinating one. And tip of the iceberg. Like, I don't think we've covered like much at all, like in comparison to like the full density.
About Iran and the history and how people think and how people, what people want. I wish I could, but I know that it's time.
I know. But again, that just means you have to come back and tell us more.
Absolutely.
That's all.
Yes.
Is there any last things you want to say to the people out there? Just anything at all?
I just want to tell everyone that is watching this video to fight for, and I feel like life is a fight and life is not easy for anyone, and let's not judge each other, let's be there for each other, and let's be happy for each other. I feel like this is the message that I want to give everyone.
I love that. That's beautiful. Well, tell everyone lastly where to find you, socials, that kind of thing. Plug all the stuff.
So I'm mostly active on Instagram, and my Instagram handler is brunettecoder.
Brunette underscore.
Brunette underscore coder. Yeah.